Houston's original neighborhood downtown is for everyone, and it's poppin'. It's our open-hearted home for our biggest celebrations and our treasured hidden gems. From the world-class theater district to incredible green spaces like Discovery Green, downtown is the place to be. In fact, more people visited downtown Houston last year than the entire population of Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and San Antonio combined. There's no better time to live downtown than now. From starter apartments to luxury lofts, everyone can take advantage of the arts, business, culture, entertainment, food, and recreation. Now, you might think of downtown as only the heartbeat of Houston's regional economy, which it is, but there's so much more to it, including free events throughout the week with Downtown Houston Plus. From the Market Square Park Farmers Market every Saturday to Yoga Flow every Wednesday, you can find something to do and eat and watch in downtown Houston. Learn more at downtownhouston.org. Downtown Houston. Get energized and revived. Hey everyone, it's me, Raheel Ramzanali, your new host for CityCast Houston. I've got a very special guest today, Charles Adams, aka Big Angry Law. You've probably heard him on the radio, seen him on TV, and you know he has an unfiltered perspective when it comes to the policies and politics that are impacting the city of Houston. So Charles is a former police officer, a former presiding municipal judge, and currently practices law. This allows him to bring a unique perspective to talk about everything that's happening in the city of Houston. So we break down his career and some legal stories that everyone's talking about. It's Wednesday, March 29th. I'm Raheel Ramzanali, and here's what Houston is talking about today. Charles, welcome into CityCast Houston, man. So excited to finally chat with you in a professional setting where everything is documented and people can hold this conversation against us. Are you excited?
I am so incredibly excited. I can hardly contain myself, sir.
Hey, so first and foremost, I don't know this. How did you get the nickname Big Angry?
So when I was a young 21-year-old police officer, my last name is Adams and I am very large. I am 6'8". And there was a dispatcher, Brian Corbell, that would call me Big Ad. And then there was an incident with me. I got jumped by a couple of guys during a traffic stop, and I got a bit angry, and it was Big Fussy and Big Angry and some other stuff. And then it kind of died off. And it seemed like a decent marketing idea for Instagram, which really I had no social media until, oddly enough, I was sitting at a football game, not Roughnecks, the Texans, the crappy football team here in town, with Bun B, the rapper, and his wife. And Queenie started making fun of me for not having an Instagram. So I looked to my wife and said, "Hey, can I have an Instagram?" She said, "I don't care what you do. Just, you know, do whatever." And that is how it all kind of snowballed.
That's so cool. So some people might know that you were actually a police officer. Then you got into law. Like, what happened from being a police officer to eventually pursuing law and serving in public positions as well? Like, how did that all happen?
I mean, I always intended to go to law school. When I was a kid, my mom was going to UT law when my parents got divorced, and she never finished. And it was just always something that very early on I plan to do. Also, me and my grandmother would watch Perry Mason every summer, all summer long, and I just thought I'd be a criminal defense attorney when I grew up, and became a police officer very young, kind of by mistake. A buddy of mine, I think he's on patrol again, him and I had gone to see a movie, and he said, "Hey man, I'm going to take this civil service exam. Would you take it with me?" And I said, "Okay." So we ended up going to take this civil service exam, and I got a perfect score, and they offered me a job a couple of days later, and I was like, "Okay. Sure." And that is the fabulous story of, and I love being a police officer. I work nights. You know, I did my thesis at Harvard kind of on why the war on drugs is a horrible idea. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't one of those cops that liked to write tickets or arrest people for drugs, mainly because I grew up in Austin, you know, using drugs. And I saw that as abject hypocrisy. Then really, I would focus on real crime. And that's, of course, would be a wonderful thing for all police officers if we would stop taxing people regressively, typically people of color and the poor, with citations or searching people's cars because we think maybe we might find some drugs, and we just focused on real crime. But I finished undergrad as a police officer here in town. I went to law school. I have two law degrees. I got my first one working night shift patrol here in town, and then went to Harvard. I worked at the I was an attorney for the state, but not a prosecutor. I was a briefing attorney, which means I wrote appellate opinions for the Houston Court of Appeals for a panel of judges. And then I was a presiding judge for the city of South Houston for about 9 years, which is the lowest level. I mean, there are lower level judges like my associate judges, but it is pretty low level cases. But you do get to participate in a bunch of trials, and you know, it's pretty interesting. I enjoyed doing it.
What'd you enjoy the most of everything that you've mentioned and now practicing law? What do you enjoy the most? Doing the media stuff as well. We'll get to that in a second. But what did you enjoy the most or currently enjoy the most?
I mean, I enjoyed the camaraderie of law enforcement. Again, the guys I worked with pretty much shared, not all of them, but most of them shared my sensibilities of let's focus on people that are doing real crime. And, you know, I worked in an area with a lot of actual crime that gave us something to focus on. But I mean, honestly, you work to make money. And while like I enjoy the media, you know, I'm obviously on Fox 26 with Quanell, and I have an evening time talk radio show here. I'll never get rich doing talk radio because I think Republicans are repugnant and I think Democrats are dumb. And that's not really a way to make it in talk radio. You're supposed to pick a team, and, you know, I'm refuse. But I mean, ultimately, I enjoy making money. Like, I like having nice stuff. I like being, you know, I didn't grow up with money. I grew up with a single mom. But, you know, when my kid says, I want to go to school in London, and I say, okay. Or, you know, my wife says, I want this new car, and I can just go buy it. I was driving to California to see one of my kids, and I had a vehicle broke down. I just walked into a dealership. It was a brand. It was an 8-month-old truck. And I just said, well, I'll just buy another one. Gave him the cash and left. And that is why you work. You should find jobs that pay you a good money and stuff that you're passionate about. I am passionate about criminal defense, and I make a lot of money doing other stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's the making of the money that's the best part of any work.
Amen. Amen to that. Amen to that. One, hey, look, I like buying nice stuff too. It's a good feeling. You know, one thing you mentioned, you said the Democrats and Republicans, it seems like they both dislike you, and they, you know, you're very open about your stance. And one of the things I admire about you from following you on social media and learning about you is that you are honest about your opinion. You're not going to hide behind other things that will placate to some people. And it's so refreshing. But at the same time, I know you're your own man. You've got your own businesses and you're not worried about being canceled. But do you ever just get drained from the negative comments that you receive from both sides?
You know, actually, I like to argue. I found Allison Cook, the reviewer for the Chronicle, to be both cloying in her writing style and to be an insufferable person. I just tell you, Ken Hoffman did a great article about her once, and I got an argument with her. And I would just argue with people. I'm an argumentative son of a bitch. And, you know, I find myself, I'm tired of it, right? I'm tired, but I don't get worn down by it. Typically, the people that don't engage me, it's fun when you have both Republicans and Democrats just making assumptions. You know, I get called a Trumper all the time, and I'm no fan of Trump. I get called a libtard all the time, and I think, you know, it's just a stupid reduction of progressivism. But the problem with our current media space is, with the exception of some notable people like Bill Maher, is that you absolutely have to pick a team or you're not going to make money in media. So even though I'm typically, I think, the highest rated on my station, which is one of iHeart's talk stations, I can't get syndicated. If you can't go on a talk radio and talk about how stupid Republicans are if you want to get a national syndication deal. And I'm not going to get a big platform on the mainstream media because you can't go on there and talk about how idiotic the Democrats are. If, you know, you've got to kind of all or nothing, like all cops are evil or thin blue line, instead of having the more nuance, which is, hey, our policing paradigm is irrevocably broken and we oppress people that shouldn't be part of our criminal justice system. But we also ignore victims to an incredible degree now in America, where we have a lot of crime with no consequence. And we need a solution that focuses on victim crime, even the lowest level thefts, all the way up to murder. And conversely, if people want to use drugs, let them use drugs. If people aren't harming you, leave them the hell alone. And this whole thing's broken. But no one's incentivized to be honest about it. Because if you're honest about it and you don't pick a team, you're not going to make money. Fortunately, I make money elsewhere, so I don't care. And I don't care about being canceled. And that is a serious consequence right now. I almost had a Judge Judy show. Like, I was way downstream with NBC Universal, and I had an agent who was Charlamagne the God's agent. And the truth is, and I've heard several times, well, we're really not looking for white male content. Well, that's awful, right? And that's this America where we're always picking one team to discriminate against. And you just have to accept, right? You're just going to live your life how you can, do what you can. And if you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. The question is, how much money do you need? But of course, as Joe Biden is driving the economy into a ditch, we're all going to be broke soon anyway. So
let me ask you about Quantel X. That was a beautiful rant, by the way. I think you hit everything. That was a good big angry rant. I love it.
There you go.
Real quickly, Face Off on Fox. I think it's one of the most talked about segments on Twitter. Everyone is constantly posting about it. You and Quantel X, are y'all friends off air?
Quantel's always professional. I enjoy him. People don't realize we were pretty much the most popular segment. I'd started a couple of years back after Matt Patrick passed away, and they cycled through people and they ended up with me. And all of a sudden we went to five nights a week. It was great. And then Martin Luther King Day, I think 2019, the producer was off because of MLK Day. And the news director thought we were off, which we pre-record them. The live shows on Friday nights, we do those live, but typically they're pre-recorded. And Quantel said some crazy stuff. And it's not my job to say, hey, Quantel, that's crazy stuff. Don't say that. And it aired. And the very next day, I got a call from the VP of Fox, and they had fired Quantel just like 2 weeks after we got made 5 days a week. And I dripped on them for years, right? Hey, why don't you give? Because I have that kind of boring making the case segment. But I dripped on them for years to give him another shot. And you know, you're aware of this. You know, they changed ratings in March of last year to kind of universal downloads, clicks, views, which is really the problem, right? That's why people say crazy, dishonest stuff on the news and everywhere on the radio, because they're trying to get those clicks and downloads. But it did allow them to give him another chance. You know, I don't know. I like working with him. And we genuinely disagree. Like earlier before this podcast, I was at Fox and we discussed Sheila Jackson Lee running for mayor. And I think what a horrible, horrible idea for the city of Houston. And he thought it was a great idea. And we have a genuine argument. But after it's over, we're just talking about our kids or having a good time. We don't follow each other on social media because I don't think we want to tear down that third wall of, you know, the myth of hatred. But yeah. No, we like each other quite a bit.
No, that's really cool to hear. All right, let's run through some big stories and legal stories. So first of all, the TEA takeover of HISD. Before you deleted your Twitter, I thought Elon got you, by the way, because this morning I was like, wait, I got to find this tweet. It was so well written. I thought Elon got you, but it looks like you did it yourself, which is
no. Cool. My wife was like, why'd you do that? Because I found some tweet dozer or something. I said, oh, I'll just try this. I'll start. Okay. And I've killed my account before, but most of my tweets that I like, I've reposted on Instagram, so they're still there.
What are your thoughts on the takeover? Going back to that,
I mean, I think there are a lot of people that are very upset about it, and I think they're being upset as completely dishonest. Right? The Houston Independent School District is doing a horrible job keeping kids safe. Bullying is everywhere. It's disgusting, right? There are kids that are scared to go to school, and it's mostly poor kids of color, right? And it's doing a horrible job educating people. And so you have a lot of up-in-arms politicians, you know, Sheila Jackson Lee, who's now running for mayor, asking the feds to get involved, and a lot of people vilifying the Republicans. And our county judge, Lena Hidalgo, has taken a very hard stand against it, right? And Lena Hidalgo, Colombian immigrant, this whole mythos of Lena that has been built up in the city. But the truth is, at 5 years old, she moved to Buenos Aires, a very wealthy family, and then moved to one of the wealthiest high school districts in Houston out in Katy. They didn't move her in HISD because they knew it's not doing a good job and it's not keeping kids safe, right? And do I think TEA will fix the problem? No, I don't think TEA is going to fix the problem. Because really, if we want to fix this problem with schools, we need small schools. A high school shouldn't be more than 500 kids, right? We need safe schools. We need them to be safer. Our schools should be safer than a courthouse. Why do we have two cops in every courtroom in Harris County protecting scumbag lawyers like me and judges and criminal defendants when we don't have that presence for our precious children in schools? You know, heartbreaking. We just had another mass shooting in Nashville. We need to, the focus needs to be on keeping HISD kids safe. The job of schools should be to prepare kids either for vocational training or give them vocational training or college so they can have successful lives. And HISD is doing a horrible job. And these politicians, they should care about the job that's being done. And I'm not saying all that they're great teachers, like they're wonderful teachers, but when you're not given the resource, and there's a lot of bad teachers that don't care too. It's like cops. There's great cops and there's horrible cops. But when you don't have the resources, and I mean, things have got to change. And I mean, we also have overarching issues. So I think it might be a good thing. I think it'll probably just be a wash, but I sure wish the politicians would stop lying about it.
Yeah. I just like the fact that somebody's trying. Right. And right. Maybe more politicians, instead of the virtue signaling, as you mentioned, trying to get the headlines, the clicks, all that stuff, give us solutions, because there is obviously struggles happening, everything you laid out. So it would be nice to see some solutions as well. All right. Let's talk about this Marcus Silva lawsuit, because this is an interesting one that could really change the future in terms of other abortion related lawsuits. So for those of you who don't know, Marcus Silva is suing his ex-wife's three friends for helping her with getting the abortion-inducing pill that she took that eventually terminated a pregnancy. And there's also talks that they might be suing the manufacturer of that pill. Is this something that is going to change and like define future litigation when it comes to abortion-related cases, or is this just a headline lawsuit?
Well, it depends, right? There's a phrase, you can't get blood from a stone, right? So suing the three friends, unless one of them or all of them are very wealthy, is probably a waste of time. But if you can drag the manufacturer in, that's a whole different deal. And obviously, this Pandora box was opened up by the Supreme Court, the very conservative Supreme Court, overturning Roe v. Wade. And I had a kid young, best thing that ever happened to me. And personally, like religiously, I do personally see life beginning when it's created. However, I completely disagree with anyone imposing their religious beliefs on other people and telling women what they should do, right? And if you want to encourage women to have babies, which is what the Republican Party wants to do, possibly consider making it more affordable for women to have babies and providing more resources. And instead of having a system for poverty, you know, an entitlement program that breaks homes, right? So we can have this huge bureaucracy that spends billions of dollars a year on bureaucrats to make sure that we have broken homes in America, instead of saying, hey, look, we're going to do this. You got a kid. I don't care if you're rich. I don't care if you're poor. We're going to do this to encourage you to have an intact home and participate in society. We're going to encourage you to keep the child, right? That would be the truly Christian, Jesus-centric thing to do, but that's not, of course, what we do. We have these stupid lawsuits that angry husbands are filing, and, you know, clearly he's bitter about something, right? Why is he suing the three friends? And at the end of the day, this woman made her decision that she didn't want to conceive a child with a husband that she was divorcing. But do I think it's viable in Texas right now? Yes, I think it's viable. And I think it will further threaten women's access to health care. So I think this lawsuit's horrible. I think Marcus is probably a horrible, bitter person that's mad and just trying to visit pain on the wife and the friends. But I do think under the idiots that we have in Austin and the idiots we have on the Texas Supreme Court, most lawyers won't say that. I personally don't give a damn, it's probably pretty viable, and it's scary for women.
All right, quickly, Jerron Thomas, this story came out earlier this week. He strangled his girlfriend to death after the couple allegedly agreed to erotic asphyxiation. And now he is facing manslaughter charges. Any thoughts on this? What do you think happens, by the way?
So there are a couple of things to think about. One, he's only been charged with manslaughter. You know, much greater likelihood of getting a probation, or not. You can't spend life in prison on manslaughter. It's capped at 20 years. So he's looking at a less of a consequence if he actually did do it maliciously. It was pretty smart on his part, and it gives his attorney something to work with. Now, I do, if you choke a woman to death, even if she's consented to the choking, you're probably guilty of manslaughter, right? But if he straight up murdered her, what a great story, right? By great, I mean great for him as the defendant, not great for society, because what a monster if he did. Either way, it's monstrous, right? But, you know, I had a client once that shot his neighbor, and claimed to the police that he did it in his sleep, right? And told me that story. And people think the attorney-client privilege is this great shield. It's not. Like, you can't knowingly allow a client to lie on the stand, right? That's suborning perjury, right? But if your client tells you a story and they stick with it, well, you can present it all day. So I argued for 2.5 weeks that my guy would sleep shot, right? Did I believe it? No, right? I thought the very suggestion was absurd. But I argued it for 2.5 weeks. Did I get a not guilty? Yes, right? So, I mean, you know, I don't know if he just killed her or if he was just being way too aggressive with sex, which, of course, I don't get that either. Like, how does choking, like, I get for men, apparently, it helps the release of the orgasm. But if you're choking a woman, what are you, just torturing her? What's wrong with you? But if it keeps him out of prison, then it was good for him and bad for society.
Charles, thank you so much for joining some time with us, man. I hope you're back here. We'd love to also get you on for some Clouston talk and give some love for that podcast, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun, sir.
That was Charles Adams. You can watch him on Fox 26, listen to his radio show on KPRC 950, or follow him on Instagram at Big Angry Law if he hasn't deleted it by now. Okay, before we go, illegal street racing has been crazy here in the city of Houston, and cops have been asking street racers to go to legal racing tracks instead of putting people at danger by racing on highways and crowded freeways. So I was reading how HPD is now leading by example. They're joining Randy Seals on the track. Now, who's Randy? Well, Randy's a guy who was arrested for illegal street racing. And then when he got out, he invited HPD officers to join him on the track. That is really cool. And guess what? The HPD officers accepted the challenge. They even decked out their cars to fit in with all the other racers. Now, if I was Randy, I would probably let the HPD officers win every single race. Do you want more CityCast Houston? Well, follow us on Instagram at CityCast Houston. We recap previous episodes, preview upcoming episodes, and you can interact with us. That will do it for today. I'm Raheel Ramsnali. Thank you for listening, and I hope you learned something new today. Charles, you coming to the Roughnecks game this weekend? It's a Sunday 2 p.m. start. They moved it from Saturday. I'm like, oh, there goes my Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday's a pretty nice game for football, though.
Yeah.